as far as we understand, JSOC strikes are presently banned there, but CIA strikes continue. So this was very daring, I would say, of Al-Qaeda to be so public and so in the open, holding this gathering. And in fact, the number two of Al-Qaeda in Yemen was present. He's very, very rarely seen in public. So this was a public taunting, if you like, of both the Yemen government and of the United States. The very act of appearing outside in large numbers is, if you like, you know, thumbing your nose at this ability of the United States to strike anywhere with drones. But it is worrying, and Al-Qaeda certainly hasn't been broken. It's carried out a number of appalling attacks, both on civilians and on the military in Yemen in recent weeks. So it's still there. It's still a problem. And the drone strikes against them are continuing.
Chris Woods, I want to thank you for being with us. Award-winning reporter who investigates drone warfare recently wrote a piece in The Guardian about CIA's Pakistan drone strikes carried out by regular U.S. Air Force personnel. He is featured in Drone, which is this new film that has just come out, just premiered in France and Germany by Tonya Hessen-Shea. I want to thank you for being with us as well from Oslo, Norway. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Get your progressive talk radio from a grassroots perspective right here.
When our children are old, they'll know land can't be sold.
KBOO is a co-sponsor of Cascadia Rising, a bioregional confluence, this Sunday, April 20. All day at Portland State University. Part of PSU's Earth Week activities, the theme of the gathering is Resist, Restore, Reinhabit. The event is free and will feature a full slate of panels, including a history of the bioregional movement, emergency preparedness and community resilience, bioregional governance, biocentric resistance, and much more. For more about the event and a full schedule, go to cascadiaconfluence.org or go to their Facebook page. Again, that's Cascadia Rising, this Sunday, April 20, beginning at 9:30 a.m. on the second floor of Portland State's Smith Memorial Union on Southwest Broadway in downtown Portland.
No tyranny, no tyranny, we'll make a true democracy. Soon one day Cascadia shall be free.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the 2014 Earth Day celebration, Saturday, April 26th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Kenton Park on North Brandon and North Kilpatrick Streets in Portland.
The Earth Day 2014 theme, Reverse Migration, will focus on local culture and businesses. Over 100 sustainable businesses and organizations, including KBOO Community Radio, will participate in this event.
This celebration will also feature lots of live music and entertainment. Celebrate our planet at the 2014 Earth Day celebration, Saturday, April 26th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Kenton Park. More information on this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. I was going to have a nice, calm program this morning until I actually happened to read one of my favorite young boy magazines, the Portland Mercury, and I was reading an article about a nine-year-old girl, who was arrested at the Boys and Girls Club in North Portland a week after she was in a fight with another little nine-year-old girl at the Boys and Girls Club at New Columbia. Apparently, two police officers were called a week later to the New Columbia Boys and Girls Club, and it appears that the two officers, Officer David McCarthy and Matthew Husbeck, thought it was appropriate to handcuff a 9-year-old girl who is in a bathing suit, place her into a police car, and take her to a police precinct without her parent being there. Now, this happened in April of 2013. In the midst, I should say, of the time when the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division was supposedly paying close attention to the activities of Portland police officers. The only reason we know about this case, because these two officers are still, we're told, models of community policing at New Columbia and North Portland. The only reason this case has come to light was because the 9-year-old girl filed a complaint with our so-called independent police review office. And of course, that's the one that the DOJ calls a self-defeating accountability system. So the mother, which, you know, I'd have done a little bit more than that. But let's just I'll tell you what the mother did. The mother filed a complaint. Actually, her daughter was so traumatized, her daughter is still in counseling. So the 9-year-old girl, 9-year-old honor student, I should say, so after she was arrested, mom went and got her. Mom files a complaint. And here's a quote from IPR Director Constance Severe, who said, because bureau policy doesn't place any limits or conditions on the arrest of small children, IPR Director Constance Severe explained the most he could do was mark the complaint as a service improvement opportunity and send it to the officers' bosses at North Precinct. Now, this is the place that a mother whose 9-year-old child was handcuffed in a bathing suit and towel at the Boys and Girls Club and taken to the North Precinct for fingerprinting. And I do believe it did say that they fingerprinted her. Yes, they did. A 9-year-old girl. And so North Precinct Commander Mike Leloff failed to return multiple messages seeking comments on this particular case. I'm sure that when you call the mayor's office to ask him about this case at 503-823, I used to know his number by heart, 3210. I'm going to look that up. I think it's 4210, but I'll look it up. When you call the mayor to ask him about this insanity, I hope that you encourage the mayor that if the policy has any wiggle room around handcuffing a 9-year-old child, that we fix that today so that no other 9-year-old child in the city of Portland is handcuffed and placed in the back of a patrol car because of a fight that happened a week before. Something is wrong with Portland Police Bureau, and it appears that our police commissioner isn't paying attention. Our police chief is totally out to lunch. He has this vision of police that isn't Portlanders' vision of how police operate. And so these two particular police officers, I got to tell you, if I lived in North Portland, I would not want to have any interaction with David McCarthy or Matthew Huspick. Because if they are that idiotic that they would arrest a 9-year-old without calling her mother or some parental guardian, then I can't imagine how they deal with adults if that's how they deal with 9-year-olds. And so I'm actually flabbergasted to know that there is no law against handcuffing. And actually, who in their right mind, even if you're arresting an adult woman at a swimming pool, I think you actually allow people to get dressed before you put them in the back of a patrol car, but yet you would take a 9-year-old child and do that? I am just absolutely appalled by that. And that wasn't even where I wanted to start the program today, but I saw that and absolutely had to share it. And this is actually really consistent with a story I did want to share, which is about a community survey that's been sent out to community leaders. And so let me tell you a little bit about this survey. So Each county in the state has a local public safety council. And the local public safety council is a legislative mandate council that includes law enforcement and social service agencies in each of Oregon's 36 counties. This particular organization meets on a monthly basis, and supposedly they work to plan for public safety and social service supports in the community. It is a way to coordinate those services. So I got a survey. Somebody emailed me this survey last week, and the survey goes like this. It is sent to quote-unquote community leaders. Actually, there are four surveys. One is community leader survey, one's a community resident survey, one's a youth serving agency survey, one's a parent and family survey. But the surveys all have one thing in common. The surveys are to so that the local public safety council, I'll actually read you what they wrote. Here is some background information. The Local Public Safety Coordinating Council Executive Committee recently voted to support a comprehensive gang assessment across Multnomah County. The model comes from the Federal Office for Juvenile Justice Delinquency Prevention and consists of three phases, including the initial assessment, implementation planning, and implementation. The assessment phase is designed to provide community partners with a thorough understanding of the nature, scope, and dynamics of the problem. And so because this was sent to me, I read it and I took the survey. And then I was absolutely appalled by what this survey proposes. The survey starts with the conclusion that gang activity is running rampant in Multnomah County. And the only question is, what is the community response to this gang violence running rampant in the community? As a community, we know that that's code for black and brown boys being targeted by Portland police. We know this because every summer, just before school stops, Portland police comes out with a new program that's supposed to either get guns out of the hands of youth or stop gang violence. Portland police officers would not know a gang member if they fell over one. And I will tell you why I know this to be true. The latest year that I was able to get numbers for was 2013. It was a project called Project Clean Sweep in North Portland. The goal, as sold to the public by Chief Mike Reese, was to get guns out of the hands of kids. In a 30-day period of time, 300 people were arrested. 45% of the people arrested were arrested for alcohol-related events. 60% of the people arrested were over the age of 20. Less than 0.1% of the 300 people arrested had any kind of weapon in their possession. And so, again, Portland police develops these models to target black and brown kids for excessive police enforcement, and then uses the title gang to justify the behavior. So this survey, actually, I encourage anyone to take this survey. I sent it all over Facebook. I sent it to community-based organization leaders, encouraging them to take the survey, because this survey will be used to develop some new multi-year anti-gang program that will just exacerbate the racial profiling of black and brown kids in our community. And that's not acceptable. It should not be acceptable in this community. And we need to make sure that our police commissioner checks back in to police reform. I'm going to go to the phone line. We have several callers. I'm going to start with Brian. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne. Hi. I just wanted to tell you, I really appreciate you calling names.
Thank you.
I mean, it's like you had another guy on your show from the CRC, I guess, and he sort of shot that down, you know, with you
right
on the phone. And I really think it's important, and I just wanted to, I think it's really important that we call names and we identify the people who are the most objectionable in this situation.
Well, I want to know how it's possible for David McCarthy and Matthew Husbeck, who are community police officers at New Columbia, to think that that was okay, and well, then for an IPR director to say, well, you know, we don't have any policies around children.
Well, Joanne, you know, there's two things on this. I think we need to take a macro view of the police forces. We just heard about Albuquerque.
Right.
I used to live down there. I believe it. You know, I mean, to be dramatic, you know, if you want to look at Breaking Bad, that was like 5 years ago, and Albuquerque has gotten probably worse.
Mm.
But I just want to say that. And there's one more thing I want to say. And you know, those 9-year-old gangs are roving everywhere. They are extremely dangerous because, you know, they haven't developed their frontal cortex or whatever.
That's right.
And you know what? They'll just do anything. But I mean, that.
You know, we're joking, but.
We are joking.
This fits very consistently with this pattern of labeling black and brown children gang members.
I'm sure our police department turns around and says, well, look at San Jose, look at Albuquerque.
Right.
You know, and so what they're getting away with up here is completely insane. And especially for Portland, I just can't believe Portland is standing still for this.
Well, I just don't think anybody's paying attention. I think Reese has full reign to do whatever the heck he wants. The police commissioner seems to acquiesce to the police chief, and the police commissioner doesn't seem to understand that the police chief works for him. And so it's a really convoluted process. That's why it is my mission to make sure that I bring these injustices to the public and demand that the public actually demand a response from our elected officials.
And the magic password here is, oh, they're Democrats, right? You know, our mayor is a Democrat, so he must be doing the right thing.
Well, we have an illusion that we live in a progressive city, and it is a progressive city if you're white and middle class and don't have to interact with the police. But that's not my experience.
And that's not the definition of a progressive city.
No, it's not.
And so, Joanne, thanks. And you know, I mean, I'm hyper aware of this situation, unfortunately, but I definitely look forward to hearing you call more names, and I'll keep calling names too.
Well, thank you. That's what we have to do, and I certainly, if I run into either of these officers on the street, I'm certainly going to ask them, what do they do to 8-year-olds?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Because if you do that to a 9-year-old, what would happen when the Boys and Girls Club, and why is the Boy and Girls Club calling the police anyway for a fight that happened a week ago?
And I know I generalize a lot, and I, you know, but the thing is wow, you know what? I've talked about schoolyard bullies.
Right. Well, and it goes back to why we should not have police inside our public schools. The school resource officers are police that are criminalizing juvenile behavior. So we need to get police out of policing schools. We don't need that's if they can arrest a 9-year-old, I don't want to know. If there are no rules against arresting a 9-year-old, we got some serious problems.
Have a great day.
You do the same. Thank you for the call.
Bye-bye.
503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. I am talking about this arrest of a 9-year-old girl at the Boys and Girls Club in New Columbia by two Portland police officers who are supposedly community police officers in North Portland. And those two police officers, David McCarthy and Matthew Husbeck. And, of course, the mom did what we tell people in the community to do. If the police do something inappropriate, then go to the IPR and file a complaint. The mother did that and found that the IPR says there are no rules against officers and how they interact with children. If that is true, then there's a public policy change that should be at the city council next week that would ensure that no other 9-year-old in the city of Portland gets handcuffed and placed in the back of a police car, and especially not one in a bathing suit and towel at a Boys and Girls Club. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to K-Boo.
Oh, I like to scream right now, before now, but for crying out loud. I mean, I'm not surprised that the police have done this to a 9-year-old child. I've been hearing for years how female prisoners in jail or prison, when they deliver their babies, they're shackled down and brutalized delivering their babies. And goddess only knows what else is happening to young and adult prisoners in prison. I'm going to get off the phone. I'm so disgusted. I want to scream, and I'm human.
Thank you, Joanne, for your call. And, you know, I've been calling the mayor's office so often lately, I was correct. His number is 503-823-4120. The mayor, the police commissioner, Charlie Hales, should have some answers for us about how this is allowed, how this is somehow normal, that we would arrest a 9-year-old and put him in the back of a police car. And I'm not accustomed to people being arrested for a crime that was committed a week before, especially when the crime is not a criminal crime, because kids fight. So, and my understanding from the staff at the Boys and Girls Club is that the fight lasted all of 30 seconds before staff jumped in and stopped it. But the interesting thing is there were two little girls that were involved in the fight, but only one of the little girls was arrested. And I'm not going to make any racial implication about the other girl, but the black girl was the one that was arrested. I will just leave it there. And so 503-823-4120 is the phone number for the mayor's office. Before I got all riled up about what was happening with this little girl out at New Columbia, I came in prepared to actually have a conversation about an interesting article I read in the New York Times on Saturday. And it was by Charles Blow, and it was called The Self-Sort. Most of you may know, if you're 50 or older, that last week we celebrated the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Civil Rights Act. And, you know, the Civil Rights Act was supposed to put in place a whole host of civil rights for African Americans and others who had been denied civil rights in this country since its inception. And so the New York Times, as they're prone to do, did a poll and wanted to find out, so 50 years later, how are we doing as far as the perception of treatment? As whether or not blacks are treated fairly. Percentage saying blacks in their community are treated less fairly than whites. And so the question was, in dealing with the police, among whites, only 37% of folks thought that African Americans or blacks are treated differently by police. But if you talk to black folks, 70% of them said that they were treated differently by police. When you ask white people, how are the courts? Are the courts treating blacks fairly or less fairly than whites? 27% of white people said yes, the courts treat black people less fairly than whites. However, 68% of black people said the courts treat black people unfairly as compared to whites. In the workplace, people were asked if blacks in the community were treated less fairly than whites. White people said, 16% said yes. In fact, they believe black people are treated worse than whites. 54% of black people, however, said yes, that is so. In stores or in restaurants, are black people treated less fairly than whites? 16% of white people thought so. 44% of black people thought so. In public schools, are black people treated less fairly than whites? 15% of white people thought so. 51% of black people thought so. In getting health care, 14% of white people thought black people were treated less fairly. 47% of black people thought the same. When voting in elections, 13% of white people thought that black people were treated less fairly than whites. 48% of black people, however, thought they were treated less fairly than whites. And, you know, we talk about elections, and we talk about, in this day and age, we have some communities and some communities that still have to stand in lines for hours and hours to vote. And we have other communities in the same states where people just walk in and vote at their leisure and then off they go. And the only difference between these communities is that the voting booths in the white communities operate differently than the voting booths in the predominantly black communities. And so this is America, folks. This is the America that we live in. This is the world that we live in. And in this so-called progressive city that we live in, model the national racial disparities. We, in fact, continue that if you just look at it by the numbers. I'm not a cynical kind of, just a bit depressed to think that pretty much the exact same problems we had prior to the civil rights. One of the things that this article really pointed out for me is how segregated our education systems are today and where people live. The proportion of families living in affluent neighborhoods have more than doubled from 7% in 1970 to 15% in 2009. Likewise, the portion of families in poor neighborhoods doubled from 8% to 18% over the same period. And what the Pew Research Center says is that residential segregation by income has increased during the past three decades across the United States and in 27 of the nation's 30 largest major metropolitan areas, according to a new analysis of census tract and household income data. The analysis found that 28% of low-income households in 2010 were located in a majority low-income census tract, up from 23% in 1980, and that 18% of upper-income households were located in a tract in a majority upper-income census, up from 9% in 1980. So basically, we are living with people that are just like ourselves. So if we're white middle class, we surround ourselves with white middle class people. And pretty much that's what we've turned the city of Portland into. The inner core is for white middle class individuals because we pushed everybody else out to the suburbs and the edges. I'm going back to the phone line. Hello, Jackson. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello, Joanne. Thank you so much for coming to the public with a lot of this information. These are a lot of things that are happening behind the scenes that never get the light of day on our news. And these are the things that when people see, it looks like a type of a whitewash ethnic cleansing.
Yes.
And so far as how it's happening, how it started with the a denial of good paying jobs. Mm-hmm. And how these people were denied the good paying jobs, so their entire neighborhoods were redlined.
Yes.
And then after their entire neighborhoods were redlined.
Yes.
In Portland specifically, those very neighborhoods were then gentrified.
Yes.
And I've been here off and on since 96, 97, and I've seen a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very troubling.
Yes.
And a lot of the middle class black people feel like, well, you know, I'm not a part of no quote-unquote gang. I speak the Queen's English. I have a college education.
Right.
But we're not, the black middle class doesn't understand that.
Yes.
This very whitewashed ethnic cleansing is starting to encroach upon them.
Mm-hmm.
And more of those Zimmerman cases, I do believe, are going to come forward. More middle class black boys.
Yes.
And black children. It's going to have to get to that point before African Americans actually understand what the word community means.
Yes.
And we start taking more responsibility for our image, for how we portray ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and most of all, you know, Portland touting to be the whitest city in the United States of America, and right. it not being challenged
well,
by anyone.
You're absolutely right. And one of the things that makes me crazy is that Portland police have full-time public relations people. So all day, every day, they are sending press releases out to the media. And the media, because of the poor state of media in this country, the media prints those press releases as if they're news stories. They read them as if they're news stories. And so we as consumers have to learn how to decode what comes over the evening news and what we're reading in our newspaper, because the code is, as you know, if there's a shooting happen, the first words on the front page of the paper is alleged gang member, right?
Yes.
And that's code to let us know that we, it's black people are involved.
The same thing's happening now with the code jargonism. The same thing was used back in the 50s and the 60s.
Yes.
And it's been 50 years since the civil rights struggle.
Yes.
And I asked myself, well, what made the civil rights struggle so intense? And what made LBJ go forward to really push for equality for African Americans?
Right.
And I dare say the Vietnam War. Mainly because a lot of African Americans had to go fight for their country just to come back to their countries to be called a gang member.
Yes, yes. Right.
You know, so it's like, okay, well, we have to give these people some type of freedom, because we feel stupid sending them to go, as Muhammad Ali said, no Viet Cong has never did anything to me.
And they never called me the N-word, right?
Right, right. Right. And he was hitting a very, very poignant point.
Yes.
So I'm here to just say, I think this is something that the African American community needs to sit down and really talk about. And I mean, not community. I hate using that word community, because it gives the wrong impression that there is a community. I want to say more or less that our African American culture, or the African American people. We were a community before integration, but yes, this is. There are a lot of middle class black people who think, well, no, this doesn't apply to me. I make sure my son pulls his pants up. I make sure my girl uses the Queen English. And come to find out, you know, they're teenagers.
Right, right.
And they should be allowed a certain mistakes. What do you call it? Youthful exuberance?
Yes, yes.
A lot of other kids aren't allowed. I mean, are allowed, but African-American kids are not allowed.
No.
So I don't want to use up your airtime. And thank you so much. And I had to say something, because I see this just like you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it deeply troubles me. And I have a lot of friends who aren't black, who live in the city, and they're completely oblivious to what's going on.
Right, yes.
Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And I want, you know, because of the Department of Justice being in town, I want you to know that it's not just the mayor that is responsible for the police. It is now the entire Portland City Council who has responsibility for ensuring that Portland police officers are in fact following the Constitution and not targeting segments of the community for enhanced police action. So I want you to call Commissioner Steve Novick as well. And his number is 503-823-4682. Commissioner Steve Novick has been asking some really good questions about the budget of Portland Police Bureau. With 10 murders last year, why do we need 1,000 police officers all armed as if they're going into a war zone? Why is that necessary in a city that the crime rate is down? Why is the city selling fear? Why do the police go to neighborhood association meetings and tell people to fear the people they don't know? Why does that happen in this progressive city? The phone number for Commissioner Amanda Fritz is 503-823-3008. Amanda Fritz also has been one of those commissioners, when she sees that some of this ludicrous behavior is taking place, that she certainly stands up and says this is not acceptable. Nick Fish, however, is a civil rights attorney by trade, and absolutely silent on the biggest civil rights issues that are taking place in our community, but he can be reached at 503-823-3589. And he's probably looking for some votes in his reelection campaign. So maybe you want to ask him what he plans to do to fix what's broken within the Portland Police Bureau. And we can add Commissioner Dan Saltzman to that list as well. And his number is 503-823-4151. Those are our commissioners. As the mayor, these are people that should be able to answer the question, why would Portland police think it's perfectly okay to handcuff and take a 9-year-old child to the North Precinct and fingerprint her and just take her to jail anyway? Why was that okay? And then the incompetent IPR to say that there's no rule against it, there's something wrong with that. So if there is not a policy change forthcoming at city council next week, then I guess we're going to have to organize to put some pressure on the city council. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Ann. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne. Thank you for your program.
You're welcome.
I'm a 30-year educator. When I read about this 9-year-old girl, my blood just boiled. This was so inappropriate. And, it's not just inappropriate, it's heinous. And the traumatization that they've inflicted on this child is major.
Yes. And this child will never, ever trust a police officer again in her life. Never.
No, exactly. Exactly. And I wanted to put another piece in here, which is education and what's happening in our schools. The militarization of the police is bad enough, but when I left public school teaching, I taught mainly in Hispanic schools, but I did teach in a school that had mixed race racial composition, and they were starting to want the teachers to pat down the students for weapons.
Whoa.
And this was in a very major, huge city to the south of us, and I just was revolted. I was revolted by the idea that, instead of looking at children as formative, human beings,
right,
formed, that they were starting to be typed as criminals and needing all kinds of surveillance and control. So I think we need to start there, and I think, the program that I'm with right now, Oregon Save Our Schools, it's really about testing and about examining the privatization and the standardization, but this is mainly going to hurt at-risk students, imposing. I have nothing against standards. I looked at the Common Core standards, and they're exactly what I used to teach, but that's not the point. It's the high-stakes testing. And it's testing kindergartners when they come into school, which is totally inappropriate developmentally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to further push at-risk students into boxes that they may never get out of now, because they're going to be tracked really stringently. And I think it's going to feed into the whole pipeline. Of
school to prison pipeline. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Right. And then, of course, the more school resource officers that are there to actually identify behavior and then criminalize it. There's a difference between being a kid and being an adult. And when I was a kid, you could make mistakes and they didn't fundamentally change your life. You didn't end up being a criminal because you were a kid that did something stupid. So thank you. I appreciate your call. I appreciate the work that you're doing. It's testing is one, and testing is also a piece of the pie, right? Because the tests, unless the tests are culturally competent tests, the results are flawed.
Absolutely, and it's just another way of stigmatizing certain schools and certain kinds of students. But listen, Joanne, anything you call for to do about this arresting of the 9-year-old, you know, I'll get as many people there as I can. And, you know, let's really show the city that this is unacceptable.
Well, wonderful. I think today we need to just call the mayor at 503-823-4120 and ask him when he's moving forward that public policy change to Portland Police Bureau to prohibit them from arresting children and taking them into the precinct. I think that's like the basic question. And I hope we ask the whole commission, don't let anybody off the hook, because since the Department of Justice is here watching Portland Police, the entire city council is responsible. So thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Have a great day.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you. And so I want to tell you a little bit more about the local public safety council. I told you there was an executive committee. So I understand now that the local public safety council is co-chaired by Mayor Charlie Hales and County Commissioner Judy Shipwright. And so when the mayor acts like he doesn't know anything about what Mike Reese is doing, it's clear that he knows, because he chairs this local public safety council, which is the same place that Mike Reese went to sell his Prosper Portland program to, and that rolled out and he thought was a great, wonderful program to make the houseless invisible. And then because of public pressure, the mayor now says, oh, no, that program never rolled out. It was just an idea that the police chief floated. He didn't float it. He actually implemented it. And 18 people have been convicted because of him implementing this very flawed program that was supposed to just arrest and criminalize being houseless. And so the local public safety council, so I told you, so Mayor Charlie Harrells and Commissioner Judy Shipwright co-chair of this committee. The members of the executive committee is Police Chief Scott Anderson from Troutdale Police, Lane Berg, Director of Metropolitan Public Defender, Gennard Browning, Oregon Youth Authority, Judge Julie France, Chief Criminal Court Judge, Joanne Fuller, Chief Operating Officer for Multnomah County, Judy Hadley, Citizen Representative, Susan Hayden, Citizens Crime Commission, Lieutenant Jeff Hurstman, Oregon State Police, David Hidalgo, Director of County Mental Health, Amanda Marshall, U.S. Attorney, Commissioner Diane McKeel, Multnomah County District 4, Christian McMahon, Department of Community Justice Juvenile Service, Susan Myers, Director of County Human Services, Annie Neal, Domestic Violence Coordinator, Chief Mike Reese, Portland Police, Brian Renard, Chair, Criminology and Criminal Justice, Portland State University, Sheriff Dan Stanton, Multnomah County Sheriff, Rebecca Stavenjord, County Health Department, Scott Taylor, Director of Community Justice, Rod Underhill, District Attorney, Judge Nan Waller, Presiding Circuit Court Judge, Jennifer Williamson, Oregon Legislature. So this is the Executive Committee of Multnomah County's Local Public Safety Council. And as you can see, it's made up primarily of county service providers and law enforcement. And so they are the people that authorized sending this gang survey out, because they're getting ready to develop this anti-gang program based on some Department of Justice model. And so the other thing that I now know is that the Local Public Safety Coordinating Council Executive Committee generally meets from 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the first Tuesday of the month. And so that means that the next meeting of the Local Public Safety Council will be on May 6th at 2014. They meet in 315, room 315 in the Multnomah building at 501 Southeast Hawthorne. I will place that information on my Facebook page as well as my website. So if you, like me, want to get up early in the morning on May 6th and show up at the local public safety council to see what your elected and appointed leaders are doing in your name, May 8th might be the day. I'm sorry, did I say May 8th? May 6th might be the day to make that happen. And so I'm going to be tracking this, because when Bev Stein and Vera Katz, co-chair of the local public safety council, back in the day, they were focused on reducing the overrepresentation of people of color in the criminal justice system. And every month when they met, the question would be asked, what are we doing to reduce the disparity in sentencing and people being charged and people being arrested? It appears that we have a new day, and what we're talking about now is how do we build a bigger and better gang program? Because we don't have enough gang enforcement officers on the street who actually don't know what they're doing. We need to put more on the street and create more fear for the community. And so you may want to know what's coming up later on KBOO. At 9 is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, this year marks the 20th anniversary of the Rwanda genocide. But to understand it, we need to go back a century. Per looks at the former kingdom of Rwanda and its long history. At 10, Eric Cascadia is off today. We'll go straight to Flashpoint, featuring these stories. Brute force and the use of torture in the U.S. public school system. Also tracking white supremacists in the wake of the recent killings in Kansas City. And the weekly report from Occupied Palestine, hosted by Nora Barrows Friedman. Want to thank you, KBOO listeners, for your generous support and prepare you that next month we're going to have our spring membership drive. You could get ahead of the curve by going to kboo.fm and clicking the tip jar and becoming a member that way. And so, other than the fact that we've got nine-year-olds being arrested and we have a IPR system that is totally incompetent to hold police accountable for the most egregious behavior, I would be ashamed if I was the director of an accountability system that could not clearly state that it is inappropriate, it is unwise, it is inhumane, it is unconstitutional to handcuff a nine-year-old girl and put her into a patrol car and then take her to jail. That is inappropriate, it is not right, and the police officer should be suspended without pay for a great deal of time so that they will learn from their egregious behavior. If that little child, that nine-year-old little girl, lived in the Southwest Hills, I would not be having this conversation with you today because those officers would have been fired. They would not be being touted as excellent community policing officers. They would be gone. They would not have a job at all. I'm going to go back to the phone line, and we're going to talk to Francis. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey,
Francis. Yep.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Thank you for keeping these issues there. I appreciate you a lot.
You are welcome.
What I didn't catch early on, what kind of questions are in that survey?
The questions are, there are questions like, they start off by just assuming that gang violence is rapid in the community. And so it's, what do you think we should do about the gang problem in your community? How are you impacted by gang violence in your community? What do you think the appropriate tools will be to solve gang problem? Why do you think gangs exist in your community? So the entire survey is geared towards convincing you that there's a gang problem, and then you get to help us figure out how to fix it.
Right.
So that's the survey.
That is just amazing to me. The police, well, actually, the community leaders seem to not recognize or realize the fact that they would get a whole lot more respect if they gave respect.
Yes.
And they need to give it to not just to the children, but to their parents.
Yes.
And their families,
yes.
And their communities, which they do not do now.
No.
And that's part of the reason there are these problems that they perceive to be so prevalent.
Well,
a lot of it is because of the way these people in authority operate.
You know, I think it's a way to try to build up his budget You know, when you have 10 murders in a city a year and you have 1,000 police officers, they have to feel relevant, right? And so what's relevant? You create fear of crime, right? So if you can convince people that murderers and rapists and gangbangers and all these people are right down the street from you, then they will fight to give you more money. It's all a money's game. I have no doubt that it's about Reese building his budget. And, of course, when the DOJ came to town, they helped to boost his budget because he gets $5 million more a year because they were found guilty of unconstitutional practices. So I don't understand how that holds him accountable, giving him more money. But
have you heard whether the judge has ruled yet?
I'm glad you asked. The judge has not ruled yet. The city asked for another week. The city's still trying to negotiate an agreement. And so they've asked for another week, which means that next Monday the lawyers will turn in their information to the judge, and we suspect the judge will rule shortly thereafter. So stay tuned.
I appreciate that judge, too. I feel that he called their bluff.
Yeah, well, it's
not quite sure what to do.
Yeah, they are.
I think he heard the community loud and clear, which is, I appreciated that a lot.
Well, I'm still annoyed. I wanted him to just come back and say, I'm tossing this agreement.
Way.
Nobody in the public thinks this is a good thing, so we're tossing it. But, you know, I live in that kind of world. I dream big. Thank you.
Yeah, I do too.
Thank you so much.
I do the same thing, and I was very disappointed. But then I started thinking about it, and it's giving him the tools to be able to just say no.
Well, that's what he's asked for. What the judge has asked for is that he have an annual check-in with all the parties to the suit. The city and the DOJ and a PPA, they don't want the judge involved in any way, shape, or form. And so the judge has said, you know, I don't want to wait 5 years to find out if you did what you said you were going to do. And if you don't give me this, then I can't find this agreement fair, adequate, and reasonable. And so I hope that he calls their bluff. I hope that they back themselves in a corner where he's forced to reject the settlement agreement. And let's get ready for court, because we need a court verdict that proves that Portland police officers are using unconstitutional practices on a whole host of people in this community. I can't wait to go to court. So I hope the judge does reject it. Thank you for your call. Have a good
one. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And looks like we have another caller. Hello, Ron. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanne. What's happening?
Hey, you know, same old, same old.
I hear you. Hey, look. The Portland Police Department obviously needs more money because they either that or they need to redirect some of the money from the weapons
and hire
somebody to counsel them when they get a call in to go and arrest a 9-year-old girl.
Right.
Okay, because anybody with any sense would have said, wait a minute.
Right.
You know,
where's her mom? That would have been my first question. Where's her mom?
Exactly.
Right? Because I'm not even going to have a conversation with a 9-year-old girl. I'm going to go and talk to whoever the parental guardian is.
Yeah. Or go back to the people that made the complaint and say, wait a minute, we need to get you in counseling with the people at the boys and boys club, and figure it out there, okay?
Right? And
because there's no way in the world, okay, unless this was the Rockefellers that called the police department and had to arrest this 9-year-old girl, there's no way in the world they would have gone out and arrested a Rockefeller.
Exactly. Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
And this was a week later, so it wasn't like it had happened at that moment. The police showed up, and the police broke up the fight and dragged off the little 9-year-old.
Exactly.
This was a week after the 30-second fight took place.
Exactly. No emergency, no need.
Right. And so these two police officers, and I want to keep saying their name as often as I can, David McCarthy and Matthew Husbeck. So I would say if I ran into either of those police officers, I would want to have absolutely nothing to do with them at all.
Make it as short and sweet as possible.
As short and sweet as possible. That's right. And, you know, I remember what was the officer, I think it was Humphreys, the one that shot the beanbag of the 12-year-old girl on the MAX line. And after he shot her with the beanbag, he went off on stress leave because he was traumatized. What do we Yeah, he was traumatized because he had to shoot the 12-year-old girl with the beanbag gun.
I think he was traumatized before he shot the girl with the beanbag
gun. Well, yes, he had some disabilities prior to shooting that girl. But exactly. when you bring a hammer to a place where pliers would be necessary, if the only tool you have is a hammer, you're going to use your hammer, right? And because this idiot shows up on a MAX line with the beanbag gun, he had nowhere to set it, right? So it's like the other officers are all struggling. He had nowhere to set it. And so what an idiot to bring that kind of weapon to a place where you have nowhere to secure it so that you could actually use your hands. But
he was trying to use that beanbag gun.
Yes. But remember, now the 12-year-old girl was before the DOJ. The 9-year-old girl is after the DOJ. So has Portland Police Department changed? Not much.
Yeah, they've changed. They've gotten a little bit worse.
Well, actually, they got more money so that they could be trained to be bigger bullies. Basically what the 9-year-old girl's mother said is they put the handcuffs on her, and they saw her do the perp walk to the car. And what stood out was the look on her daughter's face, the fear and the sadness.
It just
boggles the mind. And bless that mother that she, I mean, this happened in April of last year. She filed a complaint, and she just got heard at the IPR meeting last night.
She should have been calling every media outlet in town.
See, here was a mother that thought she was going to follow the rules. She was going to use the system in place, because that's what I tell people all the time. If you don't file complaints, we don't have any records of it, you know. And Portland Police say they don't get any complaints anymore, right? Complaints are way down. Well, there's a reason complaints are way down. It's because we have an office that isn't independent, that doesn't investigate the police, and doesn't do anything to hold them accountable. In fact, they throw out 77% of the complaints that come into their office. So this mother was lucky they didn't actually throw her complaint out for lack of information.
Yeah, well, you know, I think whoever picks the people to be on the IRC ought to take a look back at who they pick, and they ought to make that change yearly. They shouldn't have the same people on the IPRC.
Well, you know, they can't keep good people on the IPR, because once people get on that committee and find out how the rules are stacked against public accountability, the good people leave. They resign. And so they're always constantly adding new people because, you know, it doesn't take rocket science to figure out this isn't about accountability. This is about protecting the butt of police officers who are who see themselves as above the law. Just like the police officer this week, did you hear about the police officer who took his license plates off his automobile when he went on shift downtown? He worked from Central Precinct. So he would take his personal automobile, park it near his precinct, but he would take the license plates off and put a piece of paper over the VIN number so that when the ticket ticket meter person came around, they would give him a ticket, but there was no license plate and there was no VIN number, right? This guy did this for a couple of years. Finally, his car was towed one day, and he came up just as his car was being towed in uniform and said, I'm speaking as a private citizen. Would you unlease my car? Can I just pay a fee to get my car back? And they said no, because actually this car has been ticketed a lot and we're required by law to tow it. And so come to find out, there's been an investigation. Oh, no, now the Internal Affairs is going to investigate. There was an investigation that Mike Reese defended this guy. This was a decent police officer. He made a mistake. He had over $1,000 in fines because of not paying his traffic tickets. And guess what? He's still on the force. He hasn't been suspended. They're just starting to investigate him. But we'll follow that story next week. I'm Joanne Hardesty. Thank you, Steve, for making us sound great. See you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day. Bye.
Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. Coming up in a half hour on Fight the Empire, it's this year, I should say, marks the 20th anniversary of the Rwanda genocide. But to understand it, we need to go back a century. Per Fogering looks at the former kingdom of Rwanda, the misrule by two colonial powers, and the troubles that came with liberation and civil war. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we'll go straight to flashpoints featuring these stories: brute force and the use of torture in the U.S. public school system, also tracking white supremacists in the wake of recent killings in Kansas City, and the weekly report from the Electronic Intifada, hosted by Noro Barrows Friedman. And at 11, it's a special hour-long Between the Covers with guest local writer Tom Spanbauer, the critically acclaimed author and founder of Dangerous Writing. That's all coming up, but first, it's Press Watch up next with Teresa Mitchell. News you're not supposed to know. Stay with us.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sold Out Music Festival happening now until April 20th at venues all over Portland. The Sold Out Music Fest seeks to bring together people of all generations and backgrounds to celebrate the music that helps to bind our collective culture together. Legends of New Orleans jazz, the luminaries of Brooklyn hip-hop, the queen of modern